Welcome to Wham Bam Tram, Hong Kong's first urban transport radio show. We've got a great show lined up this week. We'll be talking public space with Corinne Lai of Civic Exchange.
When we're talking about how street space is used, we've got to think about, well, how do we distinguish between street activities that we want to encourage and things where it's basically somebody doesn't want to pay retail space?
First, we've got Martin Turner, chairman of the Hong Kong Cycling Alliance, in the studio for a quick look at the news. Someone just sent me this study from the University of California. I got very excited and then looked into it. It's actually from 2012, but it's just gone viral again. Well, anyway, the story is luxury car drivers behave worse. Researchers noted that the relative class of cars approaching a junction or pedestrian crossing and the high-class car drivers overwhelmingly cut off pedestrians.
That's interesting. I mean, I've experienced this generalization that you can make about other vehicle users by the vehicle type as a cyclist and also as a hitchhiker. In my youth, I was pretty keen on getting around UK and Europe by hitchhiking, and so you spend your time standing at the roadside watching approaching cars, and you can make just pretty good judgments about many, about the likelihood of getting a lift, but also about their actions, about the way they'll respond or not respond, or gesture or drive near or far from the make of car.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just true. You can.
Yeah. And the problem in Hong Kong is almost everyone, it seems, has a luxury car. You don't really see a battered old VW Polo going down the street.
Or you can see a few in the parking areas of the government-provided quarters. That's the only place I've ever seen older cars.
So do they drive better than the Mercedes?
That would be a good point for a survey.
Let's go and take a look. Okay, Corinne, so just tell us a little bit about your job.
I basically do research on public open space, walkability, urban design, and other issues like that for the independent think tank Civic Exchange.
Right. Now, I had proposed some time ago some ideas about pedestrianization to Transport Department.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest objection that I always get back is the Mong Kok situation, the Sai Ye Street, the buskers and the
right.
noise. And I understand that you've done quite a bit of research into that issue.
Yes, it is a long-standing issue, and it's always been sort of pushed to the bottom of the priority list because of the way Hong Kong is governed. It's basically seen as a low-level district issues, but the districts are unable to solve it themselves because of their limited powers. It has to be done, like, you know, at a citywide level, and it's just never, you know, comes to the top of the list of all the many things the government is worried about.
Right, that's interesting. It's viewed as a district-level issue, and yet the government, as a central, uses it as an excuse to cancel projects all over town.
Yes, it's basically gotten into a situation where, because of this sort of lack of street management, it's sort of galvanized public opposition to pedestrianization schemes, and district councils are very wary of endorsing such schemes because they're worried about getting complaints.
Yeah, and in my district, the district councillor has objected to pedestrianisation schemes on exactly the same reason, for noise.
I think, though, that Mong Kok was a unique situation, and it was a sort of like a perfect storm of factors that led to that situation developing in that particular location. You do not see that type of situation arising in other pedestrian areas in, say, Causeway Bay or, you know, Jordan, Sham Shui Po, or Central. It was a specific, you know, confluence of factors that made that particular space very attractive to many street performers, and also the triad influence in the area that allowed them to monopolize the space.
So what exactly were those factors? Do you think it was a triad influence?
One, that was one factor. They were basically renting out, you know, patches of pavement to the street performers. You know, they were, you know, making money off of that. They were providing all the equipment, plugging in the gas generators or the power. Second was that it's a very central location. It's very easily accessible by public transport. Third was that a lot of the singers there are actually nightclub singers from Mong Kok, Yau Ma Tei, and they saw that as a free place to perform. You don't have to pay like the fees to perform in a club or a bar. And four, I think it was basically a place where people could rent storage units to keep all their equipment. So, like, many things made it very convenient for street performers and attractive to them. Plus, it has a very heavily touristed district, a lot of foot flow. So all of these things together combined to create the Mong Kok situation. And I think that if you're looking at other places in Hong Kong for pedestrianization scheme, you've got to actually just think intelligently, well, do these factors exist? And if not, then maybe it's not going to become such a problem. Also, it had like upstairs residences who basically had to endure this noise pollution, you know, long term. And if it's not a major residential area, and, you know, they're singing somewhere that, you know, it's not really going to bother anybody, that's another factor.
Is there a sense in which, because there are so few spaces where people can perform, that one that was there attracted everybody and anybody and made the whole situation worse?
Yes, we've talked to street performers, and they say that, you know, they don't have a lot of places where they can perform, where they feel safe to perform. Or where they can attract the sort of audiences that they're looking for that are close to public transport. And so, I mean, there's a scheme in the West Kowloon Cultural District Park where you can apply to do street performance there. But all the street performers we talked to are like, oh, who's going to bother to go out there? It's so inconvenient, and there's not a lot of, you know, people there except for on the weekends. So I think, you know, once you create one space that's attractive, then everybody goes there, to the point where some performers were like, we don't want to deal with Mong Kok. It's just like too much even for us. So they go to Chip Sai Choi instead.
And does that account for the high noise levels, that the concentration of people there was, everyone's trying to outdo each other in volume terms?
Yes. So what we looked at were some overseas examples, and like some cities, they will actually limit the number of street performers that can be in one space at the same time. Like they'll say you have to be 30 meters apart from each other or some kind of, you know, arbitrary number. Because, I mean, it's not just that, like, you know, residents and businesses are complaining. Even the street performers themselves are like, wait, this is like getting too much for us to deal with. It's inconvenient for us to be competing with the guy next door, you know, being loud. We don't want to have to call the cops on each other all the time when somebody's being obnoxious. They're like, we would like some kind of a system to be able to follow, to have clear rules, to not be subject to arbitrary police, you know, complaints, like the cops just show up for what the street performer perceives to be no apparent reason, and they can't, you know, have any clear criteria to follow, like, if I'm below this level, then I'm okay, like, this volume level. There's no decibel limit, essentially. It's basically subjective. If someone complains, then, you know, the cops show up. Yeah. So they want something that's more predictable as well. A lot of them do.
You're listening to Wham Bam Tram, and we're here with Corinne Lai of Civic Exchange. So as well as music performance, obviously, in Mong Kok and many other places, you have insurance salesmen, you have telephone salesmen, they're setting up their booths. So people seem to be desperate for space, and they're just using it for these commercial purposes. Is that a problem in Hong Kong?
That is a long-standing street management issue, and it's because our legislation is quite outdated. They don't have a good way of dealing with these types of commercial uses because it doesn't fall under the definition of hawking. Even if they're like selling you a mobile phone contract, because you're not physically exchanging cash for goods, that doesn't fall under the definition of hawking.
Right. If you're selling an old man selling flowers, you can be done for hawking. Mm-hmm. Or if you're an old lady fixing bicycle wheels, you can be done for hawking.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're selling mobile phone contracts, you're okay.
Yep. I mean, we looked at some overseas examples, and in a lot of places, you actually have to, if you want to do promotional activities on the street, you have to apply for a permit and you have to pay a fee. Like right now, they just sort of roll up and they just set up for free. And then it's like if the FEHD comes by and fines you, then what happens is that the guy who's standing there eats the fine, not the company that's paid him to stand there. The companies basically wash their hands of them. If you get fined, it's none of my business. And if you get fined and you have to, you know, lose your job, then we'll just hire somebody else to do the same thing. It's no big deal for the companies.
Do you think if we had more street space, that would solve the problem, or would it just get worse?
I think lack of street space is an issue. The fact that pedestrians are already squeezed onto narrow pavements. When we're talking about how street space is used, we've got to think about, well, how do we distinguish between street activities that we want to encourage and things where it's basically somebody doesn't want to pay retail space and they're just sort of, you know, taking advantage of the free public space that there is to do something that they probably should be doing indoors.
I'm very interested in the organized crime aspect that you mentioned, because we've actually covered that in a different topic, which was illegal parking and triad gangs taking over parking spaces. So it sounds very similar. Do you have any evidence of this, or is this sort of, how did you come across this?
Mostly anecdotal from when we're talking to the street performers, and, you know, they talk about, you know, I've got to pay rent to somebody, or, you know, somebody's like charging for the space.
How much do they charge?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know about that.
In broad terms, what's the classifications of open space? I mean, we could look at a street and then a section of pavement and bits of land in between, and they can be used in different ways. Mm-hmm. How does the government classify what we've got? How do you look at what we've got?
The government's definition of public space, they actually don't use the term public space in planning. They use open space, which can be public or private. So when they're counting open space, like countable open space, to fulfill their planning requirements, some of that may be like recreational park space, or they count the podium gardens in large private residential developments. That goes into the bin as well. That gets counted. So they don't really distinguish clearly between public and private space unless they're getting to the very, very detailed planning level for like an individual development.
Okay, so that's clearly a problem. I mean, and it must count against the people at the lowest end of the pile who don't have access to those nice private spaces.
Yes, it's an issue. For example, when there's a redevelopment in an older urban district and a new residential development goes up and they have some podium space for the residents there, that gets counted towards that district's open space requirement, but it cannot be enjoyed by, you know, everybody who lives in the district.
Right. Actual parks and sitting out areas, I mean, they're all part of the open space.
Yes.
But are you more interested, or how do you see fitting in the less defined spaces that actually offer some potential for use?
Yes, there's a lot of this nebulous space that is also used recreationally at times. And some of it's like greenbelt land, some of it's like the pier in Saingpun that was, you know, a functioning cargo pier, but it's also got a lot of recreational use, and the government's a little bit unsure about how to deal with that.
Good, good. I hope that the way that's a really popular place and it's promoted in tourism. Our own tourism board promote it, and yet the government would like, I think, to simply shut it down, but they daren't because it's so popular. Which is a great thing, isn't it?
Another example was recently in the news, the Bishop Hill, where they found that old reservoir. I've been visiting it on and off, you know, for years, and it's a very fascinating space. It's not a formal park managed by LCSD. It's basically a hill that got left there. Local residents have been going up there and building all sorts of stuff on their own. They've got like exercise bikes and hammocks and, you know, sort of like fitness equipment. They've got their own benches. Like they're kind of constructed out of bricks and tiles. Like even the steps going up the hill itself, apart from the concrete steps that the government has built, they've sort of like nailed planks down and put down like car mats and like iron rebar to strengthen the slope so that people can walk up. I mean, it's kind of interesting. They even have a mahjong shack up there.
Super. Hong Kong people. Don't you just love them?
The ingenuity is quite impressive. Someone hauled like 6 ping pong tables over. I don't know how, but yeah.
Wonderful. And what's going to happen to that, though, now? It's been under the spotlight.
I don't know. I mean, as far as I know, the government has said they're going to preserve the reservoir, but as to the open space, I don't know what's going to happen to that.
Got a specific one there. The pleasure ground regulations, which LCSD applies to every single plot of land it's assigned to manage, don't change. The rules don't change. They're not differentiated between different locations.
They actually can do differentiate. Mm. They just often don't.
Well, thank you. And perhaps, is there a way forward there? Should we be putting pressure on LCSD to start to manage its harbourfront areas differently from a small sitting out area from a park?
I think, yes, that was one of the major recommendations of my public open space study from a couple of years ago. The thing that sort of prevents them from doing that is basically fear of complaints. They're basically, their organization is set up as a facilities management organization, not a parks and recreation department per se.
And next week we have Uber's head of regulatory affairs talking rideshare, taxi trades, and why Uber Eats has banned bicycle deliveries.
Certainly, I'm trying to think about deliveries that I get done where I live, and I can't help but think that it would be much more acrimonious to do that on a bicycle than it would be to walk most of the time. Like, for example, take a bike somewhere than it would be to quickly walk somewhere. By the time you walk, find a place to park, all those bits and pieces, it might actually be easier to quickly walk back and forth somewhere.
That's next week on Wham Bam Tram. And now it's time for our drama, Alphard Wars. This story is purely fictional. Certain long-standing institutions, agencies and public offices are mentioned, but the characters involved are wholly imaginary. Any similarity with any characters living or dead is purely a coincidence.
Yes, it's Balhinia Lee, head of the transport department in Hong Kong. Urgent call for the president, thank you. I have information regarding the security of the nation. Well, we need to ban bicycles across the whole nation. Well, they're a danger. Data? We don't need data. We're the Hong Kong Transport Department. Well, have him call me back, please. Gosh, it's so hard getting in touch with the boss these days.
Mrs. Lee, this is Peter Wienerbader and Frank Lee to see you, madam.
Ah, the police. Someone we can rely on. Send them in, please.
Ma'am.
CSP Vader. Frank, how nice to see you again. Are you YUU members? We get points on the parking here now.
No, ma'am. We walked here from the MTR.
Walked? MTR? It's too far. And how did you get across the highway?
There's a bridge, ma'am. Apparently.
Yes, there's a bridge, ma'am. Buckle up, Frank. It's a perfectly good bridge.
Ah, yes, our walkability team. I forgot about them for a moment.
Well, that's what I want to talk to you about. The police? Well, some of us senior officers feel it's time for a new priority. To perhaps focus more on people than protecting vehicles.
Whatever do you mean?
Well, perhaps we start prosecuting illegal parking and parking on the footpath instead of jaywalking.
Vader, have you gone stark raving mad? Sometimes the only place to park is on the footpath. We can't start chipping away at our rights like that.
It's just, there's 250,000 seven-seaters in Hong Kong now, ma'am. I mean, don't you think it's time to start clamping down a bit?
Clamping down? On the seven-seaters? CSP Vader, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, it's a new idea. Prioritize the pedestrians a bit. Just giving you a heads up. I'll take it to the boss.
Oh, good luck. He's not answering the phone.
No, I mean the chief executive.
Haha, good one, Vader. At least you've still got your sense of humour.
Goodbye, Balhinia. Come see us in Wan Chai sometime. It's literally a 2-minute walk from the MTR.
Huh. Bye, Vader. Bye, Frank. Call me.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't get too cozy with transport department, Frank.
Madam, you go ahead. I need to make a phone call.
Good, good. I will enjoy the walk back to the MTR.
Mind if I take an Uber, madam?
Oh, those things. Well, don't get caught.
Oh, no, madam. We've given up on Uber prosecutions long ago. CSPU, we need to meet as soon as possible. Veda's losing the plot.
Oh, somebody else's problem. There's my beauty. I knew you wouldn't forget me.
So you're a friend of Davina?
Well, look, I need to level with you. I am Davina Vader. There was an accident. I swapped bodies with this old lady.
Excuse me for saying, that's a bit far-fetched.
Is it, though? The horse knows, don't you, boy? Somebody else's problem knows. Deep down, this is me, Davina Veda.
I don't.
Horses don't see outward appearance. They know the soul of the person.
Actually, probably not. I mean, he's like this with everyone. They're not like dogs with scent or anything.
Well, ask me something only I would know.
All right. What did you, I mean, Davina, want to call somebody else's problem when he first arrived?
Is this a trick?
No. There's only two people in the world who know the name Davina picked out. Me and Davina.
You're not recording this.
You don't know. I'm calling security.
I do know. I just don't want to say it out loud.
Well, whisper it then.
I wanted to call him. Four demands.
That's right.
Obviously, I was thinking about legs, you know, firing on all four cylinders, that sort of, not, you know, those demands.
Yes, madam. You made me swear to never tell a soul you'd even had such a seditious thought.
Well, it wasn't seditious when I came up with it, was it? How was I to know that slogan would become such a hot potato?
I see, ma'am. Well, this is most interesting. How are we going to sort this out?
I need to meet with me. Get Chief Supervada for a meeting. I don't care how you do it. At the swimming shed. I need to be sure she's not bugged.